This is a poem called Southern Literature. She hunched in the back seat and fired one lucky off the one before. She talked about her good friend Bill. No one wrote like Bill anymore. When the silence grew uncomfortable, she'd count out my six rumpled ones and ask, noblesse oblige, how are your literary lucubrations progressing? Not good, I'd snarl. My poems were going nowhere, like me, raw, 28, and having, she said, a worm's eye view of life. And awe, I had no sense of awe. But once I lied, terrific, the Atlantic accepted five. She smiled benignly, composed and gaily fatalistic, as I hammered to win Dixie, revving the slant six till it bucked and sputtered. She smoothed her blue, unwrinkled dress. Bill won the Nobel Prize, she purred. If I laid rubber to the interstate and started speeding, how long, I wondered, how long would she scream before she prayed? Would she sing before I murdered her? Would we make Memphis or New Orleans? The world was gorgeous now and bigger. I reached for the gun I didn't own. I chambered awe. I pulled the trigger.
There's some of that violence.
No act of violence actually takes place in that poem.
It's certainly being contemplated.
Okay, a little bit.
I still like gaily fatalistic. that's nice there. But I enjoy that poem a lot. And the one before that is The Children. And you've got a real gun in that one, almost, and whiskey shots, and I think the bottle goes against the wall.
Yeah. But it doesn't break.
That's right. Yeah. Well, see, that's the same. The violence being contemplated, the bottle against the wall and not breaking. What's happening there, Andrew?
In which one? This one?
Yeah.
Southern Literature? In this one, it was simply a matter of, we're playing, this kind of head game that old women and young men sometimes get into, and she wins, and of course you dream of killing her. And it's a very satisfying dream, and not if you do it, you understand, but and then I was also playing in a certain way with how these conventions of Southern literature and the connection between violence and awe, murder and some form of transcendence. And I was playing them as a bit of joke, and because I think they are a bit of a joke too. And in the other one, that was just a scene where I was in a workshop with some friends, and we were whacking each other's poems around, and then the drinks come out, somebody brings out one of those wretched little, pint bottles of empty bottle of bourbon, and, well, how long does that last? And then, so my friend kind of takes it back and flings it against the wall, thinking she's going to get this satisfactory shattering, right. And it just thunks the drywall and, slides down, and everybody's like howling because she's tried to pull this gesture off that died, but it seemed right somehow,
Would you mind reading that poem?
Oh, sure.
I love that image though. Big emphasis and then
boom. The Children. She reared back, pitched the empty fifth against the wall. Why not? The poems had all been cursed and spanked, or taken out and shot. We shied away from the spraying glass, except there wasn't any. The bottle bounced off drywall. We laughed because it wasn't funny, which made it funny, very funny. We joked about the low romantic gesture. She grabbed the bottle, placed it on a pillow, conveyed it to the sidewalk, lay it gently on hot concrete and smashed it with a rock. We stomped the glass beneath our feet. We danced atop the jagged shards. We sang and then sang louder. We tangoed, flamencoed, cha-cha-chawed the glass to bursts of powder. Next week, we each brought in a shy young poem, its pink face slapped, its hair slicked back, its blubbering half-soothed. It sang, we clapped, applauded dutifully and long, encouraged it, admired its spirit, then down to business, knives, whiskey, gunshots fired. Now, there's no actual violence in that poem either, Troy.
It's certainly being contemplated.
Those are all metaphorical acts of violence.
Yeah, but it's certainly on your mind.
Well, yes, and aren't you glad it's there?
Yes, I certainly am. I enjoy it. I wouldn't have brought it up.
Rather than some, you know, out in the world.
Exactly.
But, well, of course, well, there's an act of violence in a workshop, right? Even when you're doing something helpful, it's an applied act of violence that the other person submits to in something like surgery, right? Which is an act of violence, but a helpful act of violence. What's Eliot's image? The dying surgeon hand, the dying surgeon operating. And so there's a certain wariness that comes in among the people too. And it can slip into psychological violence. You certainly see that. And you have to tolerate a certain amount of that. And so the joking gets kind of rough too, as people are kind of like, you know, doing slapping the wound a little bit to keep it's going to spread the pain out. And I'm interested in that. And when we write those poems, then we tear them apart. We want somebody to take a whack at them so we can take out the weak stuff. And sometimes it takes a little violence for people to get you to see it. I say that sometimes I'm a little harsh with students because they have to see these things. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I want people to have the decency to do that for me too. Mm-hmm. And I remember when people have done, you know, honestly and sincerely shown me things that I was trying to see and I couldn't see. And it's not a pretty process. It's an psychologically uncomfortable and unpleasant process.
Mm-hmm. And with this book like Ecstatic and the Poison, you've had several books before this. How much of that pre-reading, do you have friends who check this out beforehand or who've read these poems? I know most of them have been published, you know, in magazines and journals beforehand, but how does that process reflect your editing process?
The poems, I don't like to show them until I think they're pretty far along. I will show them to Aaron when they're at a certain stage, when I think they're done or nearly done. Or sometimes they'll even consult with her a little bit earlier. Should I use this word or this word here? That kind of thing. Whereas prose seems to me a more collaborative effort. I'll show her things that are in fairly rough draft and ask for her comments. Is it going in the right direction? Should I cut this out? What do you think about these kinds of things? With the poems, I want to make my own decisions and get them as far along as I can. Then I'll sometimes send them out to journals, or I'll keep them aside to show to friends. More and more, I'd send them to journals, and then, you know, sometimes they'll be published, and then I'll look at them and go, oh no, back into that one. But also, you know, I do find that people who can be a good critic for one book are not always the best critic for the next project you're working on, and I suspect that's true for me too. When I have a good eye for certain things that people do, and maybe not a good eye for other things that they're doing. So sometimes I have to root around and find somebody who sees what I'm seeing, so they can see where I'm failing to do it. Mm-hmm. And it takes some, you know, going around, and you can hurt people's feelings and they can hurt yours as you try to find somebody who can really open it up for you and help you understand what you're doing. Arcadia. This poem begins with a epigraph from The Tuscaloosa News, August 22nd, 1996. It's from the police log. Burglary. A book of classical mythology of unknown value was reported stolen from a carport storage room in the 3400 block of Arcadia Drive between 11 a.m. Saturday and 4 p.m. Sunday. Arcadia. While rooting in the storage room for frozen peas, canned peaches, I scanned the shelf where classical mythology once slumbered. It was gone. I'd labored over it, Zeus underlined and Hera lit with yellow ink, while I pursued the panicked wood nymphs, then fled with them in terror, a panicked nymph myself, until I turned into a swallow, a reed, a nightingale, and I escaped, escaped not just the lust-mad god I thrilled to be, but escaped the library and the life I was preparing for, and which I've lived. But even here, even in Arcadia, peaceful and heavily policed Arcadia, he'd come for me. The deity of sleep and dreams, I'd studied him in school and passed that test as I had passed all other tests. The god of thieves, the escort to the underworld, the messenger. Why had he come to rouse me from my life, a life where in the morning I knew I would be granted evening, and in the evening I knew I would be granted morning? This knowledge an altar on which I've sacrificed an animal, my life up to this moment. Suddenly, I saw the drowsy thief reclining beneath the red oak in my yard, as if, because he is a god, he owned my oak, owned it because his feet are shod with wings. Thief, thief, I yelled. I was crying. Then I had fallen at his feet, and his ludicrous small wings ruffled at my breath. He laughed and fanned the pages of the book. Remember when you were a swan, a reed, a nightingale? Remember? He held the empty book before me, the pages drained of every terror I'd given and received. I've come with a message. Run. I started running, and I changed to a cat, a greyhound, and a fox, before, as a deer, I leapt the fence, flew, a crow, to the blackest woods, slipped through the sharpest bramble, mink, racing before the sly god, changing with every step to something terrified.
There's a serious metamorphosis in that poem.
I hope so.
You start out looking for the book, and then all of a sudden it's... But speaking of sources from that, you get it from the newspaper.
The newspaper,
do you find those things happen often? Or, I mean, you're probably not actively searching for that, but maybe you were.
You're just reading the newspaper and something sticks in your head, you know, like somebody stealing a classical mythology textbook seems, you know, you kind of admire a burglar for that, you know?
I like the joke in the line, though, it's a classical book of unknown value.
Yeah,
It's like, what do you really mean there?
Yeah, exactly. And that, of course, gets your interest. And you think about, too, I think about all those kind of carport storage sheds my aunts had and my we've had in houses that my parents moved in over the years, and I know that you have some pickled peaches and the chest with the frozen beans in it, and some odds and ends like the books thrown up on that upper shelf, and so I knew this place, and I thought, well, I've sat in the library and read those myths, and you do that thing. You become those characters, and you become not one of them, but you become all of them, both pursuer and pursued. And then you take that knowledge and you do something uninteresting with your life, And so I was playing with this. Would this be like a message? Would this be like Hermes coming to tell you the gods have decided that you need to, get on with things,
That's excellent. How about one more poem, if you don't mind?
Okay. Flamingos have arrived in Ashtabula. Flamingos have arrived in Ashtabula, or one has. Bending to fetch the morning paper, the mayor saw it standing on her lawn, poised one-legged like a plastic bird jabbed into grass. And thinking it a joke, she laughed. It lumbered, lurched into the air, and sailed across her back fence, rising pink against the near-pink Ashtabula dawn. Flamingos have arrived in Ashtabula, blown here, we think, by a line of thunderstorms, a scrap of pink confetti on the wind, except those storms were months ago. No zoo reports a lost flamingo, and it doesn't seem lost. It circles the airport tower, lands on the courthouse, and stalks a drainage ditch behind the mall, where people linger with binoculars to watch a flamingo feed in Ashtabula. A local bar, once Dewey's hometown lounge, is now the Pink Flamingo. Pink chairs, pink drinks, stuck in the ceiling, hundreds of plastic pink flamingos hang above us, upside down, observing while we sip pink gin and ponder the waitress's pink t-shirts. From them, even pinker pink flamingos with sequined eyes return our gaze. Flamingos have arrived in Ashtabula. The tropical bodies resplendent against gray sky, the languid beating of long wings. We see them in our imagining and dreams, and now, in daylight, we scan the sky, the bogs, the ditches, for a hint of pink or parrot green, a red that shimmers, turquoise, electric yellow eyes, or I do. I speak for no one but myself. Flamingos have arrived in Ashtabula.
And that would be another interesting source. Where would you get?
The newspaper. Paper. It's a true story. They had this flamingo that was flying around Ashtabula. And it seemed, you know, those simply those words, flamingo and Ashtabula, were so peculiar together. And the coming together of something exotic and something unexotic, mm-hmm. and what that might mean, and how this thing became a celebrity. I mean, this story was covered in the paper for a couple of weeks off and on, usually in just little snippets. And so a lot of these details are actual, you know, mm-hmm. about the poem, and, I mean, about the situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, just stuck in my head as something weird and interesting and worth thinking about.
You got hooked on it. You just kept following the little stories about
yeah,
the flamingo.
Absolutely.
Flamingo spotted at
Ashtabula. And, you know, they would see it flying around the airport tower. And that was literally a true fact, you know, a true story. And I just got fascinated by this, you know, having known now Ohio winters, you know. And that flamingo seems kind of something certainly exotic and almost southern happening, transplanting. And so you have these odd overlappings, you know, that come out of the blue. Mm-hmm. And I was just fascinated by it.
I like Dewey's turns into the flamingo bar. That's pretty
yeah.
nice too. I could just see the regular, you know, neighborhood bar, and then all of a sudden everything is pink.
And becomes a theme bar, right?
Exactly. You know?
Yeah. By the way, here's my favorite bar name. The Dewdrop Lounge.
They kind of messed it up there, didn't they? That's pretty good.
This is literally true. I don't know where it was, but I remember seeing that. And you're thinking, somebody's missing the concept here, you know?
That's great. Thank you very much, Andrew.
You're welcome.